Good evening. Another assassination, this time in Iran. Is Israel responsible and why? A child handcuffed by cops in Michigan dies of COVID. And Alice Brock of Alice's Restaurant fame, still feisty at 80. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI News for Friday, November 27th, 2020. An Iranian nuclear scientist described as the guru of Iran's nuclear program has been gunned down in the street in a town near Tehran. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was ambushed in the town of Absard, about 40 miles east of Tehran. Four assailants opened fire after witnesses heard an explosion. Iran's defense minister, Amir Hatami, describes the scene.
At first, the car carrying him was shot at, and about 15 seconds later, a Nissan pickup truck that was loaded with explosives blasted about 15 to 20 meters away from his car, inflicting wounds on him that led to his death.
Thanks to Al Jazeera for that sound. An advisor to Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, vowed that the country would retaliate against the perpetrators. Iran's foreign minister identified Israel as the likely culprit. Fakhrizadeh was identified by Israel's prime minister in 2018 as director of Iran's nuclear weapons project. Remember that name, Benjamin Netanyahu said during the presentation. With a presidential transition in mid-play, analysts expressed alarm the assassination might complicate any attempts by President-elect Joe Biden to rejoin the JCPOA, the joint agreement with Iran signed by President Barack Obama, ending the Islamic State's nuclear weapons program. Retired U.S. military officer and writer Danny Shurjan says whatever the source, the killing is bound to escalate tensions between the United States and Iran.
We need a degree of clarity and raw honesty about what this is. This is state terror. This is an assassination of a sovereign nation. This would have been considered outright terrorism in pretty much all media if the victim and the perpetrator had been inverted or really anybody else. And I think it's important to note that. We need to note that America's key ally, special relationship in the Middle East, assassinates scientists. We need to recognize that. So that's the first point. The second one goes to your second aspect of the question, which is like, is this just bigger than a standard Israeli drone attack or a standard Israeli gunman assassination? Because this does happen with some regularity in its history. And I think the answer is yes, for a couple of reasons. We're in the midst of a U.S. transition. There is complication potentially of Biden's kind of handling of the Iran nuclear deal. Biden has talked about renegotiating, getting back to the JCPOA Obama nuclear deal. If I were Israel's right wing ethnocracy, you know, masquerading as a democracy under Bibi Netanyahu, if I was that government and I wanted to do everything in my power to stymie the Iran nuclear deal from coming back, this is a, whether that was the motive or not, this is one of those things. It could really complicate that. There's a lot of factors, which is why I think it's getting so much attention.
Former special assistant to Colin Powell and top State Department official Colonel Larry Wilkerson says his sources tell him Israel is a prime suspect, but the collaboration probably leads to the White House with the purpose of boxing in Biden.
Netanyahu and Pompeo and Elliot Abrams and Trump, I suppose, although I don't credit Trump with this much intelligence, will be trying between now and inaugural day on 20 January to do everything they possibly can to close the door on President Biden when he becomes president, being able to reenter the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to conclude that Israel, a state that has a very vivid background of armed assassins and terrorist activities, just think back to the Irgun in 1948 or the King David Hotel when they kill dozens of people. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that they probably did this.
What's the benefit of having a war with Iran, such a big country? It seems to me that even if we sent a huge American army with the America so divided about such a thing from the very get-go, you couldn't really occupy Iran with 60, 70 million, 80 million people.
Well, I take your point, and I'd agree with you. I think probably 60% of Trump's core base voted for him because a lot of them were military families or had extended military families. And they thought he was serious in 2016 when he said he was going to end those stupid wars and call the Iraq War in 2003 a stupid war, which it most certainly was. So you've got a point, but you see, you have to listen to Bob Gates, too, former Secretary of Defense for George W. Bush and then Barack Obama, when he said Saudi Arabia and Israel are ready to die to the last Americans. This is not America trying to get into this war through Trump or anyone else that I'm aware of. It's Israel and Mohammed bin Salman in Riyadh trying to get America to take care of their problem in Tehran. That's what we're looking at.
As a military person, you've been there at the top level looking at this situation. How realistic is that?
It's not realistic to the point that we would invade, but it is probably realistic to the point that they can foreclose all the options that President-elect, then-President Biden would have for reentering the JCPOA and thus set up a set of, you might say, irreconcilable tensions between the United States and Iran that would allow for the gap to continue to exist, the lack of diplomacy, the lack of any rapprochement, continue to be the case until the Republicans can get back in 2024 and resume the stance and the policy that Pompeo and Abrams and one has to thank Trump. But I don't think Trump was ever really behind this. I think this is Mike Pompeo and his buddy Bibi Netanyahu in Jerusalem.
If you were advising President-elect Biden right now, how would you advise him to respond to this? And how should he respond to this?
I think he needs to pick up the telephone and maybe call Bibi and tell him, cut it out, calm down, that all he's going to do is make me, Biden, more angry with him and less apt to do anything that he wants me to do. And I might even let Mohammed bin Salman know the same thing, because this is treacherous. Remember George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and all those boys in the beginning who had these things going on with Britain and France and almost derailed us at the very beginning of our republic. And Washington said after it was all over, don't ever let your interest get so coincidental with another state's interest that you go down with them. Well, that's the way the United States has been operating with Israel. And Mike Pompeo has taken that to a fare thee well. We are so close to Israel right now that anything Israel does is what we do and vice versa. That's not good.
Where do you see this heading in the next few days?
I hope it calms down a bit, but I don't think it will, because Secretary Pompeo is bound and determined through whatever methods he can gin up to make it as impossible as anybody could for Joe Biden to get back into the Joint Conference and Plan of Action.
And doesn't Tehran look good if they don't directly respond, like with the Soleimani thing? They look like the peace, the people who want peace, and it's the U.S. that's being bellicose in Israel.
You're absolutely right. What we've been doing, and if you look at international polls, not U.S. polls, look at international polls, you'll find out that we're the ones isolating ourselves. Israel is the state in the Levant that's isolating itself. Not Iran.
Anything like that?
Just that this is very dangerous. I certainly hope the Biden team gets in fast, transitions smoothly, and is able to start some diplomatic action with Tehran again, because it's just sorely needed.
Colonel Larry Wilkerson is a former special assistant to Secretary of State and Joint Chiefs of and before that, he was chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Colin Powell, and he was a top State Department official as well under Colin Powell. Peace activist Kathy Kelly says she's worried that these tit-for-tat attacks between Israel and the U.S. on one side and Iran and its allies on the other may spiral out of control.
We have the precedent of the assassination by drone of General Soleimani and the United States being responsible for that, and how really close to a huge escalation the world came because of United States recklessness. And we're always in a situation where people who are sworn militarists and believe that those are the best tools in their toolkit pull us all into grave, grave dangers. I can certainly imagine that this is going to create great difficulties for an incoming administration. They could alleviate some of that difficulty if they would make it very, very clear that they want to end the economic sanctions against Iran, extend the hand of friendship as best they can to help people suffering all across Iran, and make it clear to all allies of the United States that the United States has no tolerance, none, for extrajudicial killings, and that the United States plans to instruct every intelligence organization and every military organization within the United States to stop violating international law by committing such terrible crimes.
If you were in the advisory position, what would you advise President-elect Biden?
He should level with the United States public. I think he should talk about how both President Obama, formerly as the last Democrat in the White House, and he have been facing lobbies with enormous unwarranted strength in the United States. The Israeli lobby through APEC in the United States, and the lobbies for the weapon makers, war profiteers such as Boeing and General Dynamics and Lockheed Martin and Raytheon. Even though he may wish to take a lead in fostering unarmed new foreign policies that aren't predicated on threat and force, he and the Congress are struggling with the unwarranted and huge, enormous influence of those two lobbies. And so the U.S. public is needed, as never before, to step up and voice what comes through in polls and even in campaigning. While campaigning, so many candidates say, we want to cut the military budget. We want to establish friendly relations with other countries. We want to work with international groups to solve the big problems we face. They say that on the campaign trail, but once they're in office, they're under this vice-like grip of the lobbies that have learned how to play rope-a-dope with elected officials to step up to the plate and assert what it is you really want going forward in foreign policy.
Peace activist Kathy Kelly. Meanwhile, the Biden transition has named a Secretary of State nominee, a National Security Advisor, Director of National Intelligence, and other national security positions. But oddly enough, the Secretary of Defense spot remains empty. The expected nominee, Michelle Fournet, was conspicuously absent from Biden's roster. Danny Surgeon says he was surprised and is asking himself why.
That's sort of difficult to say with any certainty. She has gotten the most attention for her past ties to the UAE, to the, you know, military-industrial complex-funded think tanks and the consulting. She's gotten a lot of attention. My only guess is that, you know, that drove some of, like, the delay and drove her not to be in that initial pick. You know, folks like Jake Sullivan, Avril Haines, and even Tony Blinken, they fly a little more under the radar. So if you're not reading alternative media, you don't see as much on their rather controversial records. That's the only thing that I could state why that might be the case. But I will tell you, it surprised me. It surprised me she wasn't in some ways the first person announced and given the Secretary of Defense.
Retired U.S. military officer and writer Danny Surgeon. United States officials are yet to comment on the assassination of Fakhrizadeh, but some American officials arguing that the assassination of the Iranian scientist, and it's the latest in a string of such mysterious killings of Iran's top nuclear scientists, would send a chilling message. If we can get him, we can get you too. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In the United States, Honesty Hodges, who was handcuffed by the police outside her home in Grand Rapids, Michigan when she was 11, a frightening incident that drew outrage in national headlines in 2017, died on Sunday. Police video showed the confrontation.
Put your hands up now!
We might be at the wrong house, all right? We'll be out of touch shortly. Walk
through. Okay.
You're okay.
Up,
put your hands up!
You're okay. All right, you're not in any trouble. Just relax.
I'm going to check you real quick, okay? Listen, sir, Brian. Hey, face the car for me. Hey, face the car for me. You'll be out of cuffs in no time, all right?
Okay.
You know somebody with the last name of Manning?
No, I do not know anyone with the last name of Manning.
Then you'll be on the wrong. You'll be on your own in just no time, all right?
Oh, yes, sir.
There's no, it's not that big a deal to be that upset, okay? Turn and face me.
Why?
Face the car one more time.
Okay.
Face the car and spread your feet out.
What?
Spread your feet out for me.
a couple kids inside.
A couple? We're, five? What is
we're working through it here to get some more intel. Hey, is that the juvenile? Is she handcuffed yet or not?
Yes.
Unhandcuffed.
No, mommy.
Okay, relax. Relax. Slow down. Hey, listen, I don't want you to get your brothers and sisters upset, okay? You did nothing wrong. In the beginning, but do you understand why we're here or what's going on?
I do now.
Okay.
The only thing I was tripping about was my baby.
And I believe me, I'm not looking to make her upset either, but she was kind of reading up. That's why I'm like, keep everybody calm, and if you stay calm, she'll stay calm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, I understand now. Yeah.
Okay.
Police video. Later, Honesty had a question for the Grand Rapids police.
If this happened to a white child, if her mother was screaming, she's 11, would you have handcuffed her and put her in the back of the police car? That's the question I have.
Honesty asks, if this happened to a white child, if her mother was screaming, she's 11, would you have handcuffed her and put her in the back of a police car? Honesty's grandmother described the child as my beautiful, sassy, smart, loving granddaughter. She says she could have been the vice president one day, or maybe the president. The world was open to her. On November 9th, her birthday, Honesty developed severe stomach pains. On November 14th, she was placed on a ventilator and died not long after. She was 14. Her grandmother said she'd been healthy and happy with no underlying condition. And President Trump said he likely would travel to Georgia on Saturday to campaign for Senators Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue ahead of their runoff elections. He called the Georgia voting system a fraudulent system and made an unfounded attack against Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger.
Be very careful. I read this morning where Stacey Abrams has 850,000 ballots accumulated. Now, that's called harvesting. You're not allowed to harvest, but I understand the Secretary of State, who is really, he's an enemy of the people. The Secretary of State, and whether he's Republican or not, this man, what he's done.
On Wednesday, Raffensperger had accused Trump of throwing him under the bus as he fought to uphold the integrity of elections in his state. Meanwhile, during yesterday's interview, Trump said for the first time since the November 3rd election, he'd leave the White House if the Electoral College made Joe Biden president, which is very likely. Although Trump added, if he loses, it's because the Electoral College was wrong.
Just to be clear, if the Electoral College votes for Joe Biden, will you concede?
Well, if they do, they made a mistake because this election was a fraud. Just so you understand, this election was a fraud. They're trying to look. Between you people, don't talk to me that way. You're just a lightweight. Don't talk to me that way. I'm the president of the United States. Don't ever talk to the president that way. All right, I'm going to go with another question. Go ahead.
So if the Electoral College does elect President-elect Joe Biden, are you not going to leave this building?
Just so you, certainly I will. Certainly I will. And you know that. But I think that there will be a lot of things happening between now and the 20th of January. A lot of things. Massive fraud has been found.
Trump insists that shocking new evidence about voting problems would surface before Inauguration Day on January 20th. And Arlo Guthrie's rambling spoken word tune, Alice's Restaurant, is a Thanksgiving Day tradition on radio stations across the country. It began here on WBAI in 1967 with the help of Bob Fass. Over the course of about 18 minutes, the folk singer unfurls a true tale involving himself and his hippie friends in 1960s Western Massachusetts. Now, more than 50 years after the iconic song hit the airwaves, its namesake had fallen on hard times. But Alice's friends have launched a crowdfunding campaign to help Alice stay in the only place she's ever really wanted to be. Provincetown on Cape Cod. Alice spoke with WBAI earlier today. She says, thanks for the help. It's been a success. She raised $140,000.
More money than I even asked for, so
Great. Well, let's tell people then that it's okay, because we mentioned there was a problem, so it's best to even tell them that it's okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, where you live and how you got there, and maybe related to the church where I've been and had lunch a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, driving up there, had to drop by, you know. Tell us a little bit about how you got from there to where you are, to that, and how you've been able to save it.
No.
Yeah?
That's, you know, how did I get to where I'm at?
Yeah.
I lived for 80 years. How do I get there? You just live. Whatever happens to me, happens. Whatever I do, I do. But you're asking me to, like, tell you my life story over the phone?
No, you don't have to do that. Maybe give us a brief. Tell us a little bit about, did you really keep the garbage in the tower?
It wasn't garbage. It was building trash, because we were making the church into a livable space, and so it was some rugs that we tore up and some old rotten wood that we tore out and some ends of lumber. You know, it wasn't food garbage.
Arlo came by. How did you know Arlo?
Oh, well, I know him since he was about 14. I met him at a school that Ray and I worked at. You know, it was the 60s. All these kids, they graduated school. They went to college for about a week and a half. It was the 60s, so Arlo was out, he was taking a course in forestry out in Wyoming or something. So he hitchhiked back and came and stayed at the church, and so did a lot of other kids from the school, and their friends, and their parents sometimes.
And he offered to take out the trash.
Yeah, because we were going to have Thanksgiving in the main part of the church, and there was all this debris.
And were you surprised when the sheriff came by and said, did they really find a letter at the bottom of the pile of trash?
No. That's just one of those things that Arlo threw in because it's so funny. But Obi didn't show up. He called. He called me and he said, did you dump some garbage, blah, blah, blah? And I said, no, I didn't, but I know who did. And I put Arlo on the phone. And the cop said, you just come right down here immediately with Vic Robbins was the other guy, not the guy in the movie. So they went over to the police station, and next thing they know, they're locked up in a cell.
So
pretty funny.
Did they actually go and pick up the garbage?
Oh, yeah. And it had rained, so it wasn't easy to drag it up a hill.
That was their sentence?
Yeah, well, no, there was a $50 fine. Oh, that was the bail? Yeah, that was the bail. There was some kind of a fine, but, you know, it was just so weird, especially at that time. Nobody knew what Arlo was all about. And
how did you know the song, had become a big hit?
Somebody told me, I guess.
I was thinking maybe you started getting phone calls and people saying they heard your name and things like that. I mean,
No. I don't think I was even listed in the phone book at that point.
Did that affect your life, though, the fact that it became such a big hit?
Hey, what do you think? I just raised $140,000. I think it made some kind of a difference.
And why is that?
Why? I don't know. It's just, I have a very strong personality, and I'm very opinionated, and I love human beings, and I want to help them. And that combination has brought me a lot of friends.
You have a studio in Provincetown, right? What do you do with that studio?
Yeah. Not anymore. I'm an artist, but I have these tremors in my hands, and I really can't draw anymore. I guess I'm going to have to be an abstract painter. But right now, it's enough that I can get the food in my mouth.
Right. So your financial problems are taken care of?
Right now, yeah.
And for the WBAI audience, where your song made such an impact on people, in fact, because of the draft message, the part of the song where he goes to the draft board, touched a lot of people's lives who had to live through that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry I was so rude to you, but it's just, you know, I've gotten a lot of calls, and I get tired of telling my story.
What should we know?
What's I know this? You have a wonderful station.
Thank you.
Everybody loves it.
Okay, thanks. Anything you'd like to add?
Nope. See you next time on Thanksgiving.
For sure. Thank you very much, Alice.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye. Alice Brock is the namesake of singer-songwriter Arlo Guthrie's 18-minute anti-war ballad, Alice's Restaurant. The story was also made into a film. And that's some of the news for Friday, November 27th, 2020. The news was produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.